Welcome back to Open Source Underdogs, the podcast where we talk to the leaders of successful open source companies about the business model that powers their growth. This week, we're excited to have Ravi Mayuram, CTO of Couchbase. In the interest of full disclosure, Couchbase is the latest database supported by the Glue server. We've been super impressed with the technology, their level of engagement with customers, and their flexibility to find ways to work with us. Ravi gives a pretty good technical and business overview, so let's just dive into it. Ravi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
So how did you get involved with Couchbase?
That's a good number of years ago. In the early stages of Couchbase, there was a lot of exciting stuff going on here, and my own experiences in databases led me to thinking, with all this innovation that is going on, with the new way of development paradigms and the new way of the data being more flexible, what should be the answer? And the folks were, some of us were thinking in terms of how to get going on that, and Couchbase was doing some of that stuff. So I started to talk to some other people here, and that excited me enough to sort of jump in and get this journey going to where we are right now.
So this isn't a tech talk, but maybe just to help our listeners, could you explain a little bit about what makes Couchbase different than other databases?
The fundamental question we were sort of asking ourselves when we began this journey was, many of the assumptions that we had to make when the relational databases were built are no longer true. Memory is way cheaper, network is way faster, and the entire application development paradigm had completely changed. There was no object-oriented programming back in the day when relational systems were built. So every paradigm around the database has changed. But the databases that we were still using, the relational ones, which were predominantly the one that are in use, were technology that was developed some 40 years ago in the late 70s and early 80s, versus every other piece that we talk about has completely changed since then. So in this new landscape, what assumptions would you make and how would you build a new database? So that is the fundamental premise. And what are those pieces that are worth keeping? What are the lessons that we have learned from the relational world? What would you like to keep, and what would we really like to change or design differently? So if you look at it from that perspective, we would like the databases to be a little bit more memory friendly and memory and network friendly. These are the two assumptions you couldn't make earlier. So it was very disk oriented, and also a single system, if you will, single node system is where relational systems were, because you could never rely on a network back then. So a distributed database, which is memory and network centric, would be one element of it from the standpoint of how infrastructure and how the bottom half of the database need to look at the problem. And on the top half was this, all this change to the object-oriented programming paradigm. So in this paradigm, there is always this object relational impedance, as we call it. And how do we basically solve that? How do we make databases that much more natively plug into the application development paradigm now, which is object oriented, and the World Wide Web is here. JSON has become this lingua franca of the web. In this circumstance, where any endpoint that you talk to is describing and consuming JSON, in this object oriented world, what would be the database's role? How can it become an easier and a help to the application developers, as opposed to being the friction point between application developer and finally when you want to roll something out to production? So how do we solve these problems in a manner which takes databases forward? It's not worrying about whether it is SQL or NoSQL, but how do databases need to move forward? And what would be those foundational changes that we have to make? And what are those good lessons that we learn from databases that we must keep? And so evolved the journey at Couchbase in building the new data platform, which is based on the NoSQL technologies and the lessons learned from there as well.
So where does open source fit in the strategy?
Very good question. One of the lessons on the last 40 years of software has been to move from what we used to call as monolithic stacks to open systems and open source. And that movement has been basically led because of this reason, that no matter how friendly or how much ever APIs that you have over there to integrate systems, you always needed to make that little tweak or a change. And you didn't want that to be hidden behind some proprietary wall where you couldn't see how the software is actually going to run. So integrating multiple components into one place had always been a huge pain, because it's not, you know, I can take widget A and consume widget B. It's not that clean. You always have to do some last mile programming, if you will, before two components will talk to each other. And you need to understand how these components work. And so having the facility to observe under the hood, and so the open source movement began. And that also gives you the ability to cultivate a community around how you're building, which is very important for adoption of a technology. So these two elements of sort of having a community as well as an ability for that community to feel that they can own a piece and move that forward, which will both solve their problems as well as move the consumed software forward, is generally the sort of the motivations behind an open source. And a platform like a database or a data platform like ours requires that community to come together and consume this, move this forward, and benefit from that, as well as the company that's doing this benefit. So in this, the lesson learned is to start with an open source sort of a paradigm and an ethos and cultivate that community. That way you get to be closer to your users, you learn from them, you adapt to the changes faster. Instead of doing the classic full-on cycle of focus groups and everything, you can basically get to your end goal faster by interacting with this community. It's a win-win on both sides, and that is always one of the motivations for the open source-based companies like ours, which want the community as well as monetize on the backside of it when the deployments are serious enough.
Can you just describe the community?
Community is the set of developers who are building applications on top of platform like Couchbase. In this case, our community is those developers who take Couchbase and build applications, the modern applications, which are the ones where you require flexible data model, performance, scale, whatever the requirements that they have, which the older traditional databases could not service those needs. That generally becomes our community, a community of a web and mobile developers, and perhaps even beyond in terms of the types of applications that are getting built on Couchbase.
Couchbase has a very nuanced feature matrix in terms of which features are community and which features are enterprise. So I guess I'm wondering, is the functionality that's in the community software enough to actually have a large community who actually uses this for production applications?
Actually, our general philosophy is that enable the developer and monetize deployments at scale. So from a feature functionality perspective, we do not throttle anything back. What we basically have is in the community edition, developers can go freely develop anything that an enterprise can actually. But where the functional feature differentiation comes in, features like security, scale, performance, because we believe those are functions of large-scale deployments, which only major successful enterprises will need. And that's where we would like to monetize that. But from the sort of API level, there is nothing that you will not be able to build on a community version, which you can only build on the enterprise. So I hope I clarified that nuance. Yes, there are certain pieces which are enterprise only, but they fall mainly under the category of security, performance, and scale. And manageability, certain amount of manageability features, because you would need that only on large deployments.
On the licensing side, you license per core. Is that right?
We license per server, and there are three small, medium, large, if you will, in terms of the number of cores per server. And that's how we tier this thing. Per core pricing is not where we start. It's basically based on the small box with 16 cores, 16 to 64 and above. I think that's how we tier our pricing model from the standpoint of it's per server licensing with n number of cores as opposed to per core.
And is that because for most of the Couchbase enterprise deployments, you're seeing dedicated servers for this database and not containers or VMs, et cetera?
Basically, it becomes easy from the standpoint of people are procuring, even about 40% of our customers run their stuff on the cloud. Even there, they're provisioning based on the quantities that they can buy, which is based on 3x large or 4x large. So it comes with a certain number of cores per server kind of notion as opposed to core pricing. And so that was easy to start there. So it's easy to describe and sell that versus how many virtual versus real. And we are a little bit more at the earlier stages of the company. So we are a little bit more lax, and we would rather have adoption than monetize every bit of it.
Do you see any challenges, though, with containers and some of the elasticity of spooling up and down servers and scaling? It's hard to know like how many servers or how many, even how many cores you have. And that's a moving target over time. How do you deal with that?
Yes, I think it is a little bit of the elasticity is the core thing that has really changed, if you will, in terms of consumption models. So it has become sort of utility computing in some cases, you would call it, or shows up as on-demand pricing. There are multiple ways to get to the same problem. But elasticity is the core of it. The whole movement to the cloud is all about elasticity. The capacity on demand is what it comes down to. So yes, you will not be able to squeeze the last drop out of it. But for the most part, you can get to it through a different proxy in terms of how much the API calls, how many are actually happening, how much throughput you're getting. So that's another proxy for exactly how many cores and CPUs you're using. But the back end of the computation is always at the CPU core level. And so, which is another way of sort of being more coarse grained as opposed to being too fine grained in terms of ops per second kind of monitoring. But we can get there as well, and we will get there. At this point, we have just kept it, like I said, simple and coarse grained. So it's an easier conversation in terms of pricing and adoption and not to worry in terms of, it's a little bit more wholesale than retail, if you will. So that makes it easier.
License enforcement, are you actually enforcing the license or is it just on the honor system?
It's honor system at this point. That our licensing enforcement is not there. Like there's one lesson learned from the 90s of not doing license managers, but that is monitoring capability, metering capability. So the rest of the commercial discussion happens based on that, the honor system of the usage. And most enterprises are very amenable to that. And so we don't see that to be any sort of an issue.
Is the lesson learned from the 90s that the licensing server could cause an outage and you just don't want that?
Exactly. The less moving parts that you need in a database from the standpoint of anything that will impede with your ops per second, I think that is the right way to go and not, you know, impose more software on it to police it.
Okay. Can you describe, so who are the customers of Couchbase?
Our technology being a horizontal one is pretty wide. It goes all the way from financial services to e-commerce to gaming to streaming media. The top 10 in any of these segments, I can go on and on in terms of areas like travel. There are 6 or 7 major segments in which we have the top 10 using. There are about another 6 or 7 verticals, if you will, where the top 5 uses us. So you can imagine our spread in the types of use cases as well as the performance and the scale requirements, because these are the digital leaders in their segments. And so they are the ones who are in the forefront of technology, and their demands are something that has never been met in many cases because they never had a technology to go to this global scale. There are places where there are like 1.5 billion of IDs sitting in Couchbase servicing any touch point. There are places where people are doing 8 and 9 million operations per second for travel reservations kind of stuff. There are places where people are doing customer 360, where they are managing hundreds of millions of documents, which is basically the information that is coming from multitude of systems in one place. Airline reservation systems are running on Couchbase. Flights cannot take off unless that transaction, in one sense, goes through Couchbase. Logistics companies use us. Any bit of information that you actually see in terms of tracking of your packages runs on Couchbase. So at the high volume, high transactional stuff, which is globally scaling with geo-distributed data and guaranteed performance, whether you are the first user or the millionth user, you get the same low latency. These are some of the use cases where Couchbase shines, and many, many, many mission and business critical applications run on Couchbase. And that's what keeps us going here. That's what gives us all the validation for all the hard work and the deep work we do in the architecture of the product.
You know, when I hear that requirement, I almost think that it's only a requirement that large enterprise has. Mm-hmm. So there's no small businesses that need this like super high throughput and multi data center, let's say redundancy and fast response times. So it's not necessarily an open source type of problem, though.
Actually not. I would beg to disagree on that one, simply because what has really happened, if you look, is that back in the day, most of the systems that were built for enterprises, small or medium or large, is basically for those systems to be targeted to set of agents who were the middlemen between the end user and the service to which they were the agents, a travel agent or a call center agent or any of these agents. You can keep looking at all these agents that we have had in the past. The real movement that is happening now, this is the digital transformation, we call it, is disintermediation of the intermediary. If you look at who is doing the travel reservation, there are no more agents. It's you and me doing the travel reservation. So your world is your community right now in terms of your user base, if you will. You have billion users who are all on the internet, on the information highway, if you want to call that. They are the ones you are servicing. So every small business, the day that they put their first service up, that's why going to the cloud is important to them, because it's got the reach. It can give you the performance at scale. It can give you the reach across globes, across different geo centers. So these have become table stakes now. It is not just requirement, which is only for the 50 companies on the top. Every gaming company that is coming up and wants to put up its first game, they should be ready to have 100 million users running on their software. And you need to show the leaderboard of the five guys who are actually on the top of that thing. How do you get to those five guys among the 100 million users playing the game? This is a challenge that a platform like Couchbase solves for them. And the same thing happens across the globe in any kind of service, if you want to, small, medium, or large. Your problems are the same. The larger enterprises, this problem is a lot of persistent and continuous throughout the year. In the smaller ones, the span of this may be reduced to one or two applications, but the intensity remains the same. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I guess what you're saying is that if you're launching a game, you start with Couchbase and develop on Couchbase. And then if you need to scale it to billions, you don't have to re-architect your application.
It runs on my laptop or it runs on three nodes. That is fine as far as the developer is concerned. But seamlessly, you'll be able to scale this to 50 or 100 node cluster and across three geo centers with redundancy and geo distribution of data and manage your GDPR requirements of data privacy, all that stuff with clicks of buttons. So stuff that you can do on the glass without you ever having to go back to redesign your applications. That's what we have really built here so that it becomes easy. Our general mantra is develop with agility, deploy at any scale, anywhere, whether it be bare metal or virtualized or containerized or in the cloud, all orchestrated and manages through one common infrastructure. And I think that is what you need in this stage, because there are a lot of unknowns that are thrown in your way. Your application can change, your deployment can change, your usage patterns change, your data needs change. So this is the database that is built for that change and built for failures, because you should basically take into account that when you're running such a large scale system, it can fail. Your rack can fail. Your data center can fail. Your cell tower near you can fail. So yet your application should be running and be able to recover and go back and get the job done for you. So that is what we have. And all this with as minimal manual intervention as possible. And so we have to automate a lot of that stuff to make the problem appear simple to the end users, whereas we do the heavy lifting to solve those difficult problems underneath the hood.
So this is probably an understatement, but what you're doing is actually very difficult. Mm-hmm. And my question is, so the open source development methodology has been good for innovation,
yes.
But because what you're doing is so hard, can the open source community actually contribute in a meaningful way?
Yes, good question. Yes, they can in certain areas, and in certain areas, perhaps left best to the professionals. What I mean by that, the core innovation in distributed computing or core innovation in some deep areas of transaction or multidimensional scaling that we do, those are not the areas where community can actually get in and develop some new feature. But there are a lot of consumption-oriented stuff on this platform that needs to be built, because a database doesn't stand alone by itself. It has got to be in the ecosystem. There are so many tools and integrations and all those interactions that you actually have to do with the database that needs to be built. And our client APIs and client-side stuff, there are a lot of stuff to be built out there because there are so many new frameworks and paradigms coming out there. So that's where we find the community involvement. And they are, by doing that, they actually enhance the core of the product as well with suggestions, with even some code in some areas by suggesting, hey, how about we do this for it to be more secure or for it to be easier and more flexible. So from that experience, we learn, and the community also contributes. In some core areas, there's less contribution, but in some of our client and integration and tooling areas, there is a lot of excitement from the community.
I realize you haven't been there since the beginning, but you've been there for some time.
Yes.
I'm wondering if it's really hard to get the monetization strategy right for open source companies. Has there been any evolution of how to charge or what to charge for over time since you've been there?
Yeah, the evolution basically has been in terms of bringing more capabilities into the platform and charging from the standpoint of solving more tougher issues in the platform. So philosophy is bring more logic to data as opposed to moving data to logic. This is the fundamental problem in one sense this platform style thinking actually solves, which is that earlier you would have a database, then you'll write a connector to move this data to a search. You'll write a connector and move this data to warehouse. You will move this to a faster performing cache. So you are sort of duplicating data all over the place. And the problem with the duplication of data, of course, is more usage of the resources, but bigger problem is consistency. You don't know which is the consistent representation of the data because you just copied them all across. So in this platform, what we have really done is bring a key value, a standard secondary index with a querying capability with a full-on query language. In this, we very deliberately chose a SQL because that's the only query language that has withstood the test of time the last 40 odd years. And then we added the search, which is the inverted or textual analysis-based search, not the classic database type search. This is the information retrieval piece truly sitting next to a database. And finally, we added the analytics piece to this one, so you can do analysis of the data that you have in the same platform. For the first time, you can do these four things in the same platform and one workload not impeding the other. That's what the magic is. And now, by doing this, what we have really done is added different types of workload underneath our platform. And so the way we monetize this platform is by different types of workload actually running on the same platform. So that has basically been the evolution. When we started, it was a straight up key value store. So you could do your get, set, update, and delete. So that's all the workload we were monetizing. Now we can monetize beyond that a select star from workload along with all the subqueries and SQL 92 standard queries. So you can write a serious enterprise app on top of this. And then you can do all your faceted navigation and search and textual analysis. That type of an application, that workload can run on the same. So you always have had this problem of trying to do a solving a search problem away from a database problem. You don't have to do that now. And finally, for all this data that is sitting in this platform, you can run your analytical query, which is pretty heavy workload, as you can imagine. And we have a massively parallel engine in the backend, which takes care of chewing through that. So in the same platform, we have workloads, which are microseconds, which is our key value get sets, millisecond response time, which is our query, and the same millisecond response times for our search. And finally, tens of seconds or even hundreds of seconds for our analytical queries, all running under the same platform, one not impeding the other. So kind of what we call as a hybrid transactional analytical system is what this platform is. So how has it evolved? Different workloads being added and serviced under the same server. And so generally the monetization works based on the capabilities we have added here.
So switching gears just a little bit, I wanted to ask about partnerships. And so there's technology partnerships, I guess, with other vendors, but I guess I'm more interested in sort of the channel partnerships. Has Couchbase been working on developing channel partners? And how has that worked out for you? Has it lived up to your expectations, or just how's it going with the partnership side?
We have started to build those out the last about year and a half or so. So we have channel partners. We also have ISVs. And also we have the GSIs, as with global service integrators. These are different channels through which we are pursuing the further adoption of this. You can see some of our partners in our sort of channels and partners website. I wouldn't want to pick any one of them out to highlight, but we work with technology partners. We work with channel partners. We work with GSIs who are implementers of our technology. And that's generally our strategy. As a platform, we need to be where, so to say, the conversation is. In many cases, partners are in those conversations, and we work with them to be in those conversations.
Have the partners been able to take over some of the support burden from you?
Yes, but it's an evolving thing where they have been able to take on some. I would say they have made more progress in taking on the professional services or the servicing element of it now. Eventually, they're also getting geared up for some of the support needs, which is an automatic, organic evolution from there. So those are in the stages of infancy.
One historical question, Couchbase, when I mention it to people, sometimes there's some confusion around CouchDB.
Yes.
And can you talk a little bit about sort of the evolution of, are those project related, or
yes,
how did the name come about, just to help people understand?
Actually, the genesis of Couchbase is the merger of two companies, a company Membase, which was the company behind the Memcached open source project, and a CouchOne, which was the company behind the CouchDB project. And the people who are behind the CouchDB project came over to this merged company, and they brought their ideas, not the source code. So CouchDB was what was built earlier. That's a separate thing. Couchbase, the code base is indigenously evolved here, a combination of what was in Memcached and eventually what we added to that in terms of the persistence tier. So that is the evolution. And at that stage, since it was a merger of two equals, Membase and CouchOne, so obviously the name had to have both parties represented. So it became Couchbase. And since then, CouchDB versus Couchbase has been a question in many people's mind. But we do not share any code between these two projects. And Couchbase, if anything, has the API compatibility with the Memcached protocol. And so it's more of the Membase interfaces, plus all the stuff that we have developed on top of it.
Are you thinking about launching a SaaS service, or maybe you already have a SaaS database as a service?
We have a Couchbase managed service available, which is offered since last June timeframe or so. Database as a service is an area we are very actively thinking, and we will be at the right time talk about what we're doing there.
You've surely been following all of the sort of controversy around open source strip mining and evolution of licenses to prevent large SaaS providers like Amazon,
yes,
from monetizing your hard work. Any thoughts about sort of what's happening there right now? And is this a good thing for open source or for SaaS providers, or is it a natural evolution?
I think there are a few classes of open source software. And so whatever the behemoths do, it should be consistent and fair from that standpoint. There are open source projects which are started by communities, so there is no single company behind them who is putting the resource and money behind it to develop that. It has just came about because of a set of people who started to develop something. If they are going to monetize on that, then there should be some way to share some of bounties from there with that community. How that can actually happen has to evolve, but that's one set. But a company like ours, or many others out there, I recently saw news about yet another open source oriented company source being forked and offered as a service. In all these situations, it's a question of fairness, like you say. And yes, it's an open source thing, but it is an open source. You should think of it as, in one sense, an escrow of the code with the customers who want to actually buy it. Somebody else profiting from it without actually contributing to it is where the the unfairness of it actually comes about. So if there is a very clear way of contributing first before monetizing from there, I think there'll be a lot less heartache in terms of how some of these bigger companies are approaching this problem. I would rather they all become part of this community and contribute to it. And after that, them offering some of the stuff as a service would seem fair.
So you've probably talked to a number of entrepreneurs who are starting companies around open source software. What is the advice, or do you have any advice for those entrepreneurs?
I think there are a couple of things that any entrepreneur first has to be very focused on. First is the problem that they are actually planning to solve. And you have to be very close to the problem first. You have to live it. You have to understand the problem. You really need to have your value proposition in solving the problem. That is the P0. Whether it is open source or not is a decision that you can take eventually. Because the reason why I'm saying that is that otherwise you get into this popularity game, and monetizing has got nothing to do with the popularity game. It's not based on eyeball revenues. Those days are over. You need to be really solving a difficult problem in the domain that you're entering. There is value in that. Even if you open source stuff over there, you will not lose value in what you're actually providing. So get close to the problem, talk to the people who are living the problem, and evolve your business plan around that. If you solve the right problem, will they hire you to solve that problem is the question you need to ask. If I build this, will they come? And if that question is answered, open versus closed, and all these are fait accompli, which will take care of themselves. And even if someone actually profits from your open source, you will profit even more. I think that's what markets are actually treating it that way. So licensing and open sourcing, somebody else running your stuff, these are all a secondary issue eventually. If you solve the real problem correctly, and of course, you have to have defensible stuff in there in terms of what is it that you are going to have, which is your magic sauce versus what is it that is freely available. That is what really will take you to your promised land.
So good advice, Ravi. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks to the Couchbase team for helping to schedule Ravi. Transcription and episode audio can be found on opensourceunderdogs.com. Music from Broke for Free and Chris Zabriskie. Our audio editor is Inez Satenji. Production assistance and transcription by Natalie Lau. Operational support from William Lau. Follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @FossPodcast. Tune in next week for the conclusion of Season 2 with something a little different. Ben Bromhead from Instacluster gives his view from the SaaS side. Until then, thanks for listening.